listening to Out of the Box Podcast with Rosie Tran. Guys, check us out on iTunes. Go on iTunes, Out of the Box Podcast, and leave a positive review. The number one thing you can do for the podcast is leave a positive review or share the podcast with your friends. And also, we're now taking alternative currency donations. So if you would like to make a donation with Bitcoin or Ethercoin or any alternative currencies, just go to outoftheboxpodcast.com and there should be a link to our coin wallet. So that's very exciting. I'm here today with a very special guest, Rochelle Lamb. She is a nonviolent communication coach. How are you, Rochelle?
I'm well. How about you?
Good. I'm really excited to have you on. I know quite a bit about nonviolent communication, but I will be asking you as if I'm completely clueless because some of the listeners do not know about this awesome way of expressing our feelings. So tell us a little bit. You worked with Marshall himself. He was the founder, and just tell us how you got involved with it.
Well, I was really fortunate. I met Marshall Rosenberg in 2000, and his book had just come out at the time, Nonviolent Communication, A Language of Life. And he actually had come to where I live. I live in Victoria, BC. He spoke here. I had read the book about 3 weeks before he arrived. And when I met him, right after I met the book, I was so sad to put it down. I just thought, I need more of this. It's so vital and so relevant. So when I got to meet him, I just thought, I just have to do this. And so I just dove in headfirst, and I devoted myself to learning nonviolent communication and to teaching it. So that's what I've been doing since meeting him.
And for those of you who are listening and who are totally clueless to who this is, he is the founder of or creator of kind of the nonviolent communication system. And unfortunately, he's deceased, but his work lives on. And so for those of you who are listening and thinking, okay, what are you guys talking about? How would you describe nonviolent communication to the average person who's listening? It's a way, I would say it's a way of communicating our needs and feelings, right?
I would say that. It's also a way of resolving conflict. It's a way of recognizing the ways in which we actually generate conflict without even intending to do so.
That's a really good way to put it. I never thought of it like that.
Well, that to me is the key piece, because when people come to trainings with me, I always make it clear that I'm not just going to load information, on top of their existing way of seeing things. In fact, I'm going to really look with microscopic vision to look at what is the way that people already communicate, because I'm not interested in giving something a new tool on top of an already existing violent tool. But we don't often see it that way. In fact, the title nonviolent communication for many people, as it was for me, can be a little bit of a turnoff. I thought... I thought naively that that book would not apply to me. Mm-hmm. And then within reading the first couple of pages, I realized, oh my goodness, no, he's talking about all the ways that we're not alert to how we create conflict and how it's so embedded in the language itself. We would just never stop to think about it. So now it was really eye-opening to just see how many ways in which I was communicating, violently with my children and, with my husband. And so, I consider it absolutely crucial to know these things.
So let's give some of the listeners a little bit of framework by what we mean by violent communication. I would say the way I interpreted it is that a lot of ways in which we're taught to communicate just very naturally or maybe unnaturally in our society uses a lot of judgment. Am I reading that correctly?
Yeah, it does. It's rife with judgment, and we're just not alert to it. So for instance, with our children, we might say something like, Chris, stop being so selfish. You're so selfish. You're not thinking about anybody else. How do you think it feels for your little brother, et cetera, that kind of thing. We don't realize that when we're using that word selfish, which is a label, we're already embarking on a path which is going to create distance between ourselves and our child. By doing that, we don't mean to do it. We're thinking that we're doing a good job as a parent, but that's not what we're actually doing. We're creating distance when we do it. There are much better ways to speak to our child than that, to say you're selfish. It's not helpful.
Yes, I totally agree with you. So what is a way for some of the listeners who are new to this type of communication for you to transform that one sentence, you're very selfish, into a nonviolent communication?
Well, we'd say something like, first of all, we start with the observation. There are four steps to the NVC process that are very helpful pieces of information to convey to other people. And it helps to refine, you know, for us to take a look at how we're expressing ourselves. So the first step in the observation is, what is the other person saying or doing that we're enjoying or not enjoying? And for the purpose of this call, we'll assume that we're not enjoying it. And so it could be that the child is, there's some cookies and he's decided to eat as many cookies as possible. And there's only one left now. And his brother hasn't had any cookies yet. And he's now taken the last cookie. Okay. And so we see, when I see you take the last cookie, when your brother hasn't had any. Now, this is a clear observation. It's a fact. And everyone in the room can agree that this is actually what has happened. So we want to start off with that as the observation. And then we would go to how we feel about it. And we want to make very clear that we're talking about a feeling and we're not doing it in order to induce guilt in the child. So we do want to bring about awareness, not guilt, but awareness. So I'll say, you know, I feel sad or I feel concerned. And then we go to what is the crucial piece of nonviolent communication, which is the need, that everything that people say or do is because they're motivated by a need, whether they're aware of it or not. So the need in the parent's case will be a need for consideration, which is a need that all of us have, you know. Even the child I'm speaking to has a need for consideration. So I would say, I'm feeling sad and I have a need for consideration. I'm wondering if you've checked, you know, if you could check to see if anyone else would like a cookie or if your brother would like a cookie before you help yourself to the last one. Now, see, this sounds very different. I'll just say it again.
This sounds very different than "you're a selfish brat."
It really does sound different. You're like, hey, you know, you're selfish. You need to learn to think about other people. Now, it sounds benign, you know, but it's not. Wouldn't you, if you're the child, prefer to hear, hey, when I see you take the last cookie without asking around, I feel concerned and I'd like us to be aware and considerate of others. Would you be willing to check with your brother before helping yourself to that? Okay, now you're actually in the business of teaching somebody something, which we're in the business of all the time anyway, as a parent. Of course we're doing this. You know, now sometimes people would say, Rochelle, it's too complicated. It's too wordy. It's too much trouble. And, you know, you're speaking a complex language to children who can't understand it anyway. And my response to that is, well, guess what? Your children don't understand you. They don't. So speak the language you would eventually like them to understand. If I'm a child and I hear you say I'm selfish, here's what I think.
Get away from me. You're mean.
Well, I think that, and I also don't really like my brother. This does not really, you know, nurture the relationship I have with my brother or with authority figures around me. And I also think, geez, I've come to a strange place. This world is weird, you know? So,
well, I do want to address that because it's a very simplistic way of thinking, but I think it illustrates violent communication very well. I was speaking with my husband, and I have a colleague that I work with who speaks very violently. And I've been working on trying to use nonviolent communication to communicate with her. And I told my husband, because her communication has been come off to me as very, very, very judgmental of me. And I told my husband, kind of unconsciously, I said, gosh, I just feel sometimes like I want to just slap her in the face because of the way she talks to me. And we had been discussing nonviolent communication. And he said, isn't that amazing? And isn't that just so crazy that she hasn't physically attacked you, she hasn't said anything insulting, but her communication is so violent and that it's creating so much resistance inside you that you want to physically harm her. And I thought, oh my God, you know, and I just became very conscious in that moment because I realized the power of our words. You know, I was being, in this case, victimized or feeling victimized by her communication. Words really do. I mean, just, I was joking around by saying, you know, you're mean, I want to get away from you, Mom, but saying, hey, you're selfish, you're this, you're that. It's very it's a form actually of emotional abuse in a way, because you're getting these judgments lashed out on you, whereas the way you gave in the example is much more of a collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like you're empowering the child to empathize with you and then make their own positive decision based on what you're communicating.
Yeah. And, you know, we create the world by how we describe it, how we speak about it. It becomes our reality. So in NBC, you know, we're really paying attention to the way we describe anybody. Like your friend, for instance, in NBC, when you say that she speaks violently in NBC language, we would say, well, she speaks in a way that I find it really hard to connect with her in the way that I would most enjoy. And we recognize that, you know, you could use the word emotional abuse, but what's more powerful, I think, is to recognize that people are attempting to meet their needs. They're often doing it, going about it in ways that are tragic. I mean, you know, if someone told you that if you use the word selfish to describe another person, or any word for that matter, that is the other person would not enjoy having that adjective to describe them, that it actually pushes the person away and gives us the exact opposite of what we would like.
Yes.
Yeah, the exact opposite.
So we're not getting our desires. We're using a way of communicating that is the opposite of getting what we want, which is very strange.
Yeah, it is. But it's what's been modeled to us. And when that's what's been modeled to you and you haven't been exposed to anything else, then you just go to what you already know. It's natural to do that, you know, and then to sort of tear your hair out afterwards, thinking there must be another way, which is why I was so grateful to meet Marshall, because he was presenting another way. And I'd always known deep down that this just doesn't make sense. Like, how could it be that my children do want to collaborate? I think they actually do want to. People want to collaborate because it's just more fun. It's way more fun. And it's more satisfying. It's more emotionally rewarding.
It is.
Yeah.
I do think kids want to, and people want to. And now let's clarify for some of the listeners. When someone is speaking out a judgment, NVC says that it's a unmet need that's being expressed underneath, or they're trying to, but tragically failing at expressing an unmet need. So maybe you can explain that a little bit.
Well, let's come up with another word besides selfish, just to mix it up here.
I'll give a perfect example. Maybe you can assist me with. So maybe you're at work, you're with a coworker, and you do something that is not the way a coworker would do it. You do it your own way. And the other person says, you did this wrong. You know, why did you do this? This is not how you do it. It's wrong.
Mm-hmm. So you're wondering how now I would respond to the person saying it, or how I would rephrase that differently.
Well, what is their unmet need? You know, they're obviously judging you. How would we prevent conflict from both sides, I guess?
Okay. So the first thing is you're going to approach this as if the person isn't judging you. Okay. I know that this is where it kind of messes with our thinking, because we're they're judging. No. When you are totally immersed in NVC consciousness and understanding, no one is judging you ever. Okay. It's not to say there isn't judgment in the world, but let's just, for the purposes of approaching this and for listeners, just say no one is judging you, but they're speaking in a way that's making it really hard for you to hear the deeper message than the language they're actually using. So in this case, the person, I would guess, because they've judged you as being wrong in how you've approached a task. So they probably have a need for, we'll say, predictability or assurances. And so far, they have been assured that the way they have gone about doing it themselves has given the result that they were hoping for and wanting. So they see you, doing something a little different than that. You're exercising your creativity here, and you're doing something differently. But they use the word wrong when really what they're needing is just a sense of a confidence. You know, the person would want, it would be better off if they said, you know, I don't have the confidence right now that you doing it in a different way will give us the results that we're after. I am open, though, to hearing your thinking around it, so that, because I'd like to be more open, ultimately, that maybe there's more than one way to do this thing. Wouldn't you prefer to hear that?
Oh, I would love to hear that.
Most people don't approach it that way because we get rigid, you know, and the older we get, we become very, very rigid, you know. So this is almost like a kind of a yoga for the brain, you know, just like stretch, you know. Yeah. And then if you're on the receiving end of that, so you're the one who's studying NVC and not the other person who's said, hey, you're wrong. You can empathize with that person. You could say, it sounds like you're not trusting that my way of approaching it will, you know, provide the result that you're wanting. Would that be the case? You see, you bypass the whole notion that they're judging. You learn to hear what they're not capable of saying because they haven't received the training.
Got it. Now, that's something that I really struggle with because I'm a new follower. And yeah. I've been trying to practice it for about the last year. And, you know, I play these little games with people I know that don't know anything about NVC where I try to see what their unmet needs are. And sometimes it's really hard. Like, I have no idea what these people want. And I try to ask them and it's like, they don't even know.
They won't be able to answer you in that language. Most of the time they're not, because people are so fixated on simply the strategies, you know. Well, I just want you to do it the right way. What could be, you know, it's not that complicated. Right, okay. Instead of, but underneath that, why do they want you to do it that way? Because it gives a sense of relief that, okay, I've had experiences with this way of doing things in the past and it's worked consistently. And so when you do something differently, I'm nervous and I'm not so sure that it's going to work. And I'd like it to work. Now, doesn't that sound easier to hear?
It does. It sounds a little bit like we're wading through the violent communication to have to figure out, and I guess that's where I'm stuck right now. I know there's this, I have a neighbor who I love. Mm-hmm. And the section of the nonviolent communication, I listened to Marshall's audio tapes. That where he says, you know, sometimes people will use more words than we like to hear. People like to talk a lot. Yes. And once we address their unmet need, then usually they'll use less words. Well, I've had this neighbor who just goes on, and I feel like her unmet need is that she doesn't feel heard. And so I don't know if validating that need would make her stop. And I love talking to her, but sometimes it's too much. I don't know if you've ever had this experience, Rochelle.
I think it's pretty universal. Yeah. I think all of us have heard more words than we would like to hear. You're not fully engaged, you know, I'm gathering when the neighbor is talking, and there could be other things that are just pulling at you. And, yeah, I mean, I think people ultimately, she has a need for connection. So she's enjoying
feeling. Connection. Yeah.
That's really what it is. Whether it's to be heard, you know, that goes with that territory. She might just, you know, you might become her favorite friend and favorite neighbor. So in that case, you need to learn how to interrupt, you know, just to say, listen, first of all, it's really hard sometimes to be fully honest. And I'm not even sure I would advocate it, you know. Would you say this is not meeting my need for connection? Maybe on a day where you're feeling really courageous and you just say, I really want to switch this up, but I'm not sure that in doing that you wouldn't also alienate or hurt the person because she's in a particular way of understanding the world as well. So people they come with their own understanding, like it's rude to interrupt or it's rude to tell me you're not enjoying our conversation. You know, many people are brought up with that. So there's a lot at stake. And in a moment like that, it can just be as simple as I'd love to listen to you. Now, I don't know if that's true or not, but let's just, you're gonna say that. I'd love to hear you. Because I would say that on some level, we actually do want to. We do want to meet other people's needs for connection. So it's not an outright lie. You know, in the best of worlds, wouldn't you just love it if whoever you came into contact with, you could fulfill all their needs? But the truth is you can't. So in a moment like that, probably how you're feeling is torn. And I would say that would be really true, no matter what. I'm torn. I'd like to hear the rest of your story. And I have some other things to attend to. That's probably a very true and honest statement.
Very true and very nice. Very not, know, you're not insulting, you're not judging. Now, we talked a little bit about the four steps, and we didn't quite get to the fourth step, which is the requests.
It's pretty important. Yeah.
Very important.
Yeah. So in the scenario where I was speaking about talking to the child, I said, would you be willing to check with your brother to see if he would like a cookie before you take the last one? That's a clear, doable request. You ask for what you want, not what you don't want.
And it's very important to use all four of the steps because that can also create miscommunications as well.
It can. And especially if you don't have a request, then that leaves an opening for others to interpret what you've just said as blaming. And there are times when the nature of the request won't be about a specific action, but it will be about the conversation that we're having and we're trying to create a connection. For instance, with couples, there are times when people will have the same arguments over and over again about certain themes. You know, there are themes in the relationship. And it might just be that, you know, it could be something like, you know, sometimes I find myself really scared to talk to you or tell you about something that's really important to me because I'm not sure how you will hear it. And, you know, and so in taking care of my need to care for you and be in harmonious relationship with you, I find myself withdrawing and therefore I'm not authentic with you. And I want to let you know that this goes on for me sometimes. And the request I'd like to make, and here it comes, is I'd like to know how you feel hearing what I've just said. That's a very important request because it's not about, I'm not going to say, would you agree that from this point forward, no matter what I ask you or say to you, you'll accept it with a smile on your face? Like, good luck with that. That would be a strategic request. Well, we want to keep the conversation now in the realm of feelings and needs. And so I will say something like, can you tell me how you feel hearing this? Or could you tell me what you're hearing me say? Because I'm not even sure I'm being that clear myself. And it would be a real help to me if you could tell me what you're hearing.
I think that's really important because I've had conversations with people who have very selective hearing. And I know that's a judgment, but...
Well, I think... We all do that, don't we?
I think sometimes, you know, I've been busy before multitasking or texting while my husband's talking to me. For sure, I'm guilty of that. But, you know, there are certain people in our lives, I'm sure everyone universally, who hear things through their context. And it may be the way you're speaking. Maybe you're saying an observation that comes off as a judgment, right? That can happen.
That can happen very easily because usually we're talking about something we don't like. So we don't like it. So we bring attention to it. And then the other person says, hey, are you judging me? It's such a tricky territory right in there. And then, you know, if you become skillful, you can ask the question, well, I know it might come across that way, but I'm really struggling here. How do I speak to you about things that I do want to draw attention to without them coming across as judgments to you? I want to be in a relationship with you where we're collaborative and we're aware of how our actions impact each other because they do. They just do. And so I'm struggling with this because I don't want you to hear it as judgment. And I can guess that it does sound that way.
And some of that can come from our communication and the way we're communicating. And maybe some of that can come from that person's programming. And so I guess it's our responsibility to communicate our emotions very clearly so the person doesn't feel judged.
It is. And there's no guarantee. There is no guarantee. You can be super clean, have a really beautiful intention. There isn't judgment in it, but there is something that you're just not liking, you don't like it. And, you know, it could be something as simple as you've had a conversation with somebody, you know, who you live with. It could be your spouse, it could be a child, or it could be, someone who shares the home with you. And there's an agreement about the kitchen, you know, cleaning up after yourself. And you've had the conversation, the person has agreed to do it. And then 2 days later, there's the kitchen and
a mess.
And now what do you do is, and you open your mouth and you say, listen, you know, I'm recalling the conversation we had just two nights ago. And there are your kitchens, there are your dishes in the kitchen that haven't been cleaned up. And, you know, I am feeling confused, surprised, a little bit of frustration. And sometimes, you know, you don't have to go into, I observe, I feel, I need, would you be willing? It starts to sound very formulaic after a while. It's good to learn them in terms of the ABCs, but then you make the language your own. And so it, you know, I'm not going to say, well, I have a need to trust that people will follow through on the things they say they're going to do. I'm not sure that's going to be that helpful, but that is the truth of what you're trying to say. And so it would just say, I'm recalling the conversation. And, you know, you had agreed that you would clean up. We had both agreed that we would, and you haven't. And I'm just curious to know what got in the way. It's implied in there. Now, you can say it. You can say, and I have a need to trust that people will follow through. I don't think it's necessary to say
it. It's not, but I think for me, it is very good to learn the steps because I'm a newbie. So for the listeners.
It is. So in my workshops, you know, which are definitely more time than the 45 minutes that we have, you know, we'll have a couple of days or 5 days, like one that I have coming up in next month. So we practice the full four steps. So it would be when I come into the kitchen and I see that your dishes are here. I feel some frustration. I'm recalling the conversation we had a few nights ago. And I do have a need to trust that people will follow through on the things they say they're going to do. Would you be willing to let me know what got in the way? Or would you be willing to attend to it? You know? So we'll do that. But then I'm hoping that when people leave, they're going to come up with their own way. And initially they will be doing that. But I think it is very important to draw attention to what the need is. And, you know, there's more needs than that, too. Is it a need to trust that people will carry through? Or is it a need that to know that we have an awareness that we're sharing this space? And what does it mean to share space with others and to know that every action has a consequence, because surely it does.
Now, so really quick, I just want to go over the four different steps for the listeners. The first step is identifying the behavior or the facts involved or the information of what is bothering you. Number two is to express.
And can I just say something about that one?
Oh, of course.
That observation, when you say it, the other person has to agree with what you said.
Got it.
Because so easily people say, okay, yeah, I have an observation. Here it is. When you manipulate me, that's not an observation. What did the person say or do? Well, I don't really know. I just feel manipulated. Well, guess what? Manipulated is not a feeling. That's an interpretation of what someone else is doing to you. So you can't feel judged. You can't feel manipulated. You can't feel attacked. Not an NVC. I'm not saying these things aren't happening. But that language will not help you at all.
So let's clarify really quick for someone who's listening is like, well, I feel manipulated all the time. What are they talking about? So for example, let's say this is a complete hypothetical, that my mom is very, I perceive her to be manipulative, where she will say one thing and do another. So instead of saying, Mom, I feel manipulated, I would say, Mom, when you say that you're going to go to the grocery store, but then you stay home instead, I feel manipulated. So the physical action or the literal observation, is that correct, Rochelle?
Yes. Here's what I would say. This is actually really easy when it comes to the feelings, although we have been trained to use words that are not feelings and they're interpretations of other people's actions. So if I ask you to draw a little face that goes, an emoticon that goes with the word manipulated, there isn't one. There's probably several that you might draw. You might draw a sad face. Okay, well, if you draw a sad face, I would say you feel sad. If you draw a frustrated face, I would say you feel frustrated. But there isn't an emoticon that goes with manipulated. That should be really helpful to listeners. So, or betrayed, because I'll even demonstrate this. This is a fun little thing to do. Is I'm going to say I feel betrayed. I'll say it twice. So the first time I say, I feel betrayed. Damn it, you know. So you would probably guess that I'm angry when I say that. Mm-hmm. If I say it a second time and now I'm crying and I say I feel betrayed, you're going to guess I feel hurt and sad. So I don't. Betrayed tells you nothing. It only tells you about how I'm interpreting what you've done, and I'm calling it betrayal, whether it is or isn't. So be better to say, I feel sad, or I feel hurt, or I feel angry or frustrated. Choose the feeling that actually goes with what's going on from in a bodily emoticon sense, you know?
Got it.
And then manipulation points to the need. Now we have a need for, you know, manipulation. There's a lot of different needs that can be connected to that. Depends on the context, but it's a need for transparency. It's a need for honesty, for autonomy. You know, we want to be autonomous in our lives, for respect for our autonomy. So you can see there's different needs that would relate depending on what the context is. But that sounds much different though. And it's very, it's empowering in some sense. Because you're drawing a boundary between what's going on in you and what's going on for the other person. And I think it's really helpful to draw those boundaries. And I don't mean it in a separating way, but in a clarifying way. So we stop being so enmeshed and creating, you know, interpersonal mush. Mm-hmm. So I'm taking responsibility for my feelings and needs when I speak with the nonviolent communication, where I'm not doing that when I say I feel manipulated. Automatically, I've drawn the other person in.
You're already blaming.
And they're going to feel, they're going to feel defensive. You're defensive. They're defensive. Good luck with that.
So the first step is to identify that action. The second step for the listeners is to identify how it makes you feel.
Yes.
The third step is to identify your needs.
Yes.
And the fourth step is to make a very clear request.
Yes. And you wouldn't say, would you be willing to stop doing that? That's not a clear NVC request. You ask for the behavior you'd like to see instead. And if it's a long-standing issue or pattern, then you would ask, you know, it would be really helpful to me if you could tell me what you're hearing me say right now. I'd like to make sure you're not hearing it as blame, but rather as an attempt to, you know, connect and resolve this with you.
Got it. And now it's very important, I think, also for the listeners to understand that when you're communicating your feelings, to not kind of have that blame. For example, instead of saying, hey, you know, Rochelle, when you talk to me like that, it makes me feel XYZ. Is that a distinction that's important?
Yeah, I would just say I feel the following because I need, you know, or because I value, or because I yearn for, because I really treasure, you know, because after a while, if you keep using the word need, you know, people are going to want to shoot you and you'll probably want to do the same to yourself. So it will start to sound like, oh, stay away from that person because all they do is talk about their needs, you know? So we're trying to speak in a way that we recognize that there are needs in the world. They need to be attended to. And for relationships to function, there are needs that are inherent in the high functioning of the relationship, like trust, like honesty, like authenticity, like care, like consideration, mutuality, reciprocity. These are all important needs. And when they're not satisfied, you know, the majority of the time, the relationship takes a hit. And then people become resentful and defensive. And those are toxic to relationships, those things.
They are. And I think the way that we talk to each other is so important. And so this is why, you know, I wanted to bring you on the show to talk about it. Something that I heard on one of Marshall's audio tapes that really, really just blew my mind was the idea of a domination language, the history of domination. And he says something in one of the audio tapes where he says, you know, people who are in touch with their needs and feelings don't make good slaves.
You know, when I heard that, I was so moved by it. Yeah, I think it's very true, because needs are, they represent a life force. You know, there's a lot of things that we would never permit ourselves to do if we were fully in touch with our needs. Mm. Because we, you know, the dominant culture, the world is, I mean, I use the word insane. It's a little bit crazy. There's so much that we're participating in that we wouldn't really do. And we also often have a sense of our hands are tied, because we do have a need to put food on the table, to care for our loved ones, our family. How do you live in this world? How do you navigate when so much of what you are, you know, engaged in is actually not even that good for the world? You know, or it we could say it's harmful to the natural environment. There's a lot of it, you know. And the more I learn about it, I mean, it's hard for me to start my car. It's it's something that, you know, I mourn that. And, you know, just recently became a grandmother.
Oh, congratulations.
Yeah, thank you. First time. And then, you know, I really recognizing that, wow, you know, this little boy is inheriting a different world than the one I inherited. And I don't know what it will be like him, what it will be like for him, but things change so fast with technology and so on. And we're so caught up in those changes. It makes it hard for us to just stop and wonder, is this really good for life? Is this life enriching? Really? So it is very, very grounding to practice NVC. It's very sobering. And sometimes it creates, you know, there's some mourning that comes with learning that, you know, a lot of the ways that I have engaged, or when I came across NVC, I already done a lot of stuff with my kids, you know, and spoken to them in ways that, you know, that really changed as a result of my learning NVC. So I had to get over the guilt I felt for having spoken to them in alienating ways.
Well, I think what was really shocking was that there seems to be a, you know, it was very empowering actually for me to share this program with my husband, because in our society, it seems like we're trying to strip specifically males of their emotional connection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we do that in the military, and we do that with other institutions, you know, and the way that Marshall described it was very empowering for a man, I think, to be in touch with his needs and feelings.
And frightening as well.
Yes.
For many men, it's frightening. For all of us to get really clear on what's going on inside of us, it can be pretty scary when you've been cut off for a long time.
It can. And I think that was a very profound statement that he said about being in touch with your needs and wants, because there is a little bit in our society of a demasculation of men who are in touch with their feelings.
Mm-hmm.
It's considered not macho. And in the context that Marshall explains it as a tool of empowerment, I think that can be very empowering for many men who maybe don't understand their feelings or are not in touch with their needs.
Yeah, it is. It is. And it also nourishes any relationship that they're in for the most part. You know, whenever we change our communication, one thing is bound to happen is there are some who will object to the changes we're making. Yeah, they, you know, say, oh, what the heck happened to you? Did you go to some workshop or something? Because you're sounding really weird.
did you go to some self-help class?
Yeah, you must have. Yeah. And, you know, and now you're trying to manipulate me with this stuff. This is not an uncommon thing for people to, you know, to encounter when they first get into NVC. And so I'm also helping people to learn, well, how are you going to respond to a comment like that? Because, in fact, I would say anybody who responds to you like that, it's they're they're protecting themselves, and very wisely so. They're taking care of their own need to protect themselves, and they have a need to trust that you're not trying to do something to them. And so the way to respond to that is to say something like, well, I did sign up for something. In fact, yeah, I've been reading something and I've signed up for something. And here's why I've decided to do it, because I'm not altogether satisfied with the way that I respond in my relationships. And that includes you. And I think I could do better. And I think this relationship warrants the effort that I'm making to be a better communicator with you. I'm doing this as much for you as for myself. And I'm wondering if that gives you the trust that you need to know that I'm honest right now.
I think that's a really good way to communicate that. Now, let's talk a little bit about you and your workshops.
Yeah.
So you are teaching up in Toronto, or do you, Victoria, BC, or do you travel for your classes?
I do travel. Yeah, I do in-house trainings. It could be for government organizations, groups. And I also work one-on-one with people, often Skype calls, so anywhere in the world. I do have a workshop coming up at Hollyhock. It's a 5-day residential. It's on Cortez Island, and it's a beautiful place, and people come from around the world to attend those workshops. So it's by invitation, and I work one-on-one and in groups. I love doing it because something happens. You get to watch, you know, people really shed a lot in the process and, you know, come in touch with their true authentic self. So it's wonderful. I also have free tools on my website. When we were talking about the feelings and needs, people can go to my website and it's like free tools, and they can just download that page and study the list of feelings, as well as the feelings that are often thought to be feelings but aren't. Like manipulated, abandoned, put down, judged, all of those words. I encourage people to learn those words by heart and then never use them. Because it's much easier than learning the other words. You know, just swear you won't use those words for 3 years. And it happens, because your life will change. It really will. It forces you to speak more authentically and deeply about what's going on.
Why do you think we're so used to these judgments? Do you think it's just, you know, pervasive within our cultures?
Well, here's going to be the very quick answer to your question. When Marshall's asked the question, he refers to the work of Walter Wink, who wrote a book called The Powers That Be, I think it's called that. And he just talked about a god that had crushed a goddess some couple of thousand years ago. It's really connecting with agriculture that, you know, we haven't always lived this way. There are people who still live the way they have for thousands of years, say the Kalahari Bushmen and, you know, certain tribes in Africa. They're very low technology ways of living. But we have given something up by separating ourselves from a harmonious way of living with the world or with the earth. Here where I live in BC, I think it's probably many First Nations people who would say this, but they could point to a forest and they would say, what you call natural resources, we call our relatives. This is a very powerful thing to take in. And it points to our way of just taking and conquering. And now I'm going to take the word natural resource, and right beside it, you have the word human resource. And how would that be any different, that we see something and we think it's there for us, including people? And so it takes a lot of kind of work and shock, I think, just to recognize the degree to which we are embedded in a way of thinking and speaking that is based on just taking care of number one, instead of recognizing that number one is actually not us, but life itself.
That is a very profound statement. I love that. I would encourage everyone to visit your website. I believe it's RochelleLamb.com. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah.
Yes. And check out those resources. Learn about NVC. It's very, very profound, especially the guys. I know I have a lot of male listeners on the show. And go and get connected with your needs and feelings. This isn't some hippy-dippy yaya stuff. This actually can help you in your relationships, at work, in your personal life. to communicate better with people in a very clear way to not create conflict and not create. Sometimes the conflict is not necessarily direct. Like I said, with my one colleague who, you know, her communication had stressed me to the point of wanting to physically slap her. It can create resentment, and I need to take responsibility for maybe not communicating to her back in the appropriate way to communicate my frustrations or the way I feel when she speaks to me in that manner. And like I said, I'm still working and learning, but it's not just about conflict in the moment. It can also be resentments or other anger or feelings that maybe you don't see the immediate effects of it, but everyone, as Marshall says, everyone pays a price, right?
Yes. It's much broader than a conflict, any conflict, when you study nonviolent communication. It reaches into every corner of our life, really. And it's very much about how we see the world. And I love the subtitle of the book, A Language of Life. So much of the language that we use is static language. And it's language that puts people in boxes. And so NVC, it's a living language. And it can be very poetic at times, too. So you get in touch with what's really vibrantly alive in you. What could be better?
That's very inspiring. All right, guys, you can check out her website. Do you have anything upcoming for the people to check out?
Only the one I mentioned that's taking place at Hollyhock, which is May 14th to 19th. Otherwise, I'm open to phone calls for either personal sessions or organizing a workshop wherever somebody lives.
Perfect. Well, like I said, I encourage everyone to check out the website and the resources. I personally have been studying nonviolent communication for the past year, and it's been very, very helpful. I'm still learning to uncover the unmet needs, the tragic unmet needs, because it's a process. It definitely is a process. And thank you so much for being a guest on the show.
Oh, you're very welcome. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you so much, Rosie, with questions. And yeah, it felt really good.
Perfect. Guys, check out our website, outoftheboxpodcast.com. As always, we're accepting Bitcoin donations, but now we are accepting Ethereum. So if you have a coin wallet, you can check us out and donate to the podcast. Please go on Out of the Box Podcast on iTunes and leave a positive comment. Positive comments and shares are the best way to help out to the podcast. And as always, we are on Stitcher and SoundCloud. This has been Out of the Box Podcast with Rosie Tran.